welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
RFS2, finally. I'm your host, John Davis. After many long delays, the Environmental Protection Agency has finalized a rule to implement the long-term renewable fuel standard, better known as RFS2. The standard requires biofuels, which will also have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions compared to the gasoline and diesel fuels they displace, to grow in production from last year's 11.1 billion gallons to 36 billion gallons by 2022, with 21 billion gallons to come from advanced biofuels. It's expected to replace more than 328 million barrels of non-renewable petroleum a year and reduce greenhouse gas emissions more than 138 million metric tons annually when fully implemented. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson says the news is good for farm-based fuels.
We estimate it will increase farmers' incomes by $13 billion annually by 2022.
And Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says it opens the door for corn-based biofuels.
There is a green light given to the biofuels industry, a green light given to corn-based ethanol focused on greater efficiencies and making sure that everyone understands that these opportunities are absolutely available and open.
Tom Bias with Growth Energy, which represents America's ethanol producers, sees the new standard as overall positive, especially the part that allows corn-based ethanol to qualify as a low-carbon fuel.
The expanded volume in the mandate continues to go up, and that's good news because, you know, if we're going to become less reliant on foreign oil, we need to increase the production of renewable fuels right here in America to create jobs, improve the environment, improve our national security and our energy security. So that's a good thing. I think also EPA's decision to modify their proposed rule, which had an indirect international land use penalty, sufficient that made us no longer qualify as a low-carbon fuel, was really troubling. This whole indirect land use issue is not based on sound science and facts, and it really needs a lot of study, by a long-term study, before it's included. But they did modify it. Current grain-based ethanol now can qualify as a low-carbon fuel, although we still have, EPA still has an indirect international land use penalty that we think is unfair, or otherwise would qualify as an advanced biofuel.
And Bias says the volume expected to be produced means more forms of ethanol will have to be made, especially cellulosic.
The overall message that they kept delivering, that we've got to get to 36 billion gallons, we're going to do that with first generation and second generation and future generation production of ethanol, and that's important for cellulosic. To know that there's a market out there, and if you're going to get people to invest in the commercial facilities to produce cellulosic ethanol, they have to know that that's available.
But the Renewable Fuels Association's Matt Hartwig does point out that current economic conditions force the government to back off a bit on the cellulosic ethanol portion, at least in the short term.
The goal for cellulosic ethanol has been ratcheted down in this rule. It was 100 million gallons. They have dropped it down to about 6 million gallons, appropriately recognizing that because of the economic conditions and some other factors, that commercial production of cellulosic ethanol has not scaled up as quickly as once thought.
But one portion of the new RFS2 that both Bias and Hartwig are none too pleased about is the international indirect land use provision that was left in. It's a sentiment shared by the National Biodiesel Board's Michael Froelich, who is glad that the EPA at least scaled back the impact indirect land use would have.
Well, unfortunately, indirect land use is still involved in the EPA's calculation, and although we're happy with the ultimate outcome, we'd like to see that part removed or changed, some other different factors, such as the benefit of nitrogen fixing by soybeans, was included in the final modeling, which gave biodiesel that push over that necessary 50% greenhouse gas emissions requirement. But moving forward, that's something that we'll continue to object to in terms of our scientific modeling, is the use of international land use. American biofuels should not be punished for international coming rules.
Overall, though, Froelich says the timing is very good for the biodiesel industry.
Obviously, the immediate impact is some great news for the industry. Last year was a difficult year, and this year, 2010, it started out difficult with the lapse in the tax credit, and that's something the National Biodiesel Board is still working on. But given this, they're combining the 2009 and 2010 volume requirements for the coming year for 2010, so it's at 1.15 billion gallons to be produced from the domestic biodiesel industry to meet the biomass-based diesel requirements in the RFS2. So clearly this is going to be a great shot in the arm for the industry.
In fact, Froelich reminds biodiesel producers that the NBB will host EPA officials at next week's National Biodiesel Conference and Expo in Grapevine, Texas, to talk about the new RFS2. And Bias says they'll be diving into the new rule more in the coming days.
Stay tuned as we go through this several hundred page final rule, which is very technical and a lot of scientific data in there as well. I'm sure we'll have other concerns, and we'll just keep taking a look at it, reviewing it, trying to address any barriers that might exist.
And we'll be watching as well to see what the new rule will bring. I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.